Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Steward Health has announced a plan to sell its physicians group to a for-profit buyer called United Health. It's a key step to offload Steward's financially gutted hospital businesses here. The deal still requires vetting, and observers and officials alike want to make sure that any Steward move preserves critical healthcare infrastructure here in the Commonwealth. Now, that's today's healthcare headline, but it's just one in a progression of healthcare stories over the past several years that paint a picture of an industry that at best is in flux and at worst is in crisis, which means who runs our biggest healthcare companies matters, and how they see these issues matters. And the question is, what do they plan to do next? Well, Dr. Kevin Tabb is president and chief executive officer of Beth Israel Lahey Health. He runs the roughly $7 billion nonprofit, and he's done so for 13 years. Dr. Tabb is here in Studio 2. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. Great to be here.
It is great to have you here. A couple of days ago, I would have been sort of more diving into your background, et cetera, but to quote The Lord of the Rings, but it is not this day, because I feel like in this moment, we have a chance to understand how you see the healthcare moment we're in. Is it flux? Is it crisis? What is it?
Yeah, I think it's actually all of those things. There's no question that we're in flux. And there are certainly elements of crisis in what we're seeing. It's funny that you thought about doing something different, and then there was news last night. That's the story of healthcare in this country and in this state. It isn't just something that happened last night. This has really been a fair number of years now of some turmoil and some flux that I hope will ultimately result in a better system of healthcare.
All right, let's set COVID aside for a second, to the extent that one can ever set COVID aside for a second. Setting that aside, you know, how often is it that something's coming up that's changing how you're thinking as a person who runs a huge healthcare operation here? Once a year, once a month, once a week? Over the last several years, COVID aside, how much flux has there been, Dr. Tabb?
I'd say it's pretty continuous. It's certainly not once a year. On an almost daily basis, all of us in healthcare are confronting change at the level that really has not been seen for a generation, at least. Now, it's true, not everything that comes up every day is of the same magnitude. The crisis that we're seeing around Steward Healthcare, one of a number of major things, is something that is much larger than we typically see. But honestly, healthcare is really struggling at the moment. Patients are struggling to get the care that they need, and that didn't start last night.
Okay, so why? Why in general are we so much less stable in healthcare than we were, say, a generation ago?
I think that there are a fair number of reasons for that. At the highest level, sort of to take a step back, I think the truth is that we don't have in this country, in contradistinction to what most other countries in the world have, we don't have a cohesive, coherent approach to healthcare. There is no real organized system of healthcare that the country as a whole makes decisions about the directions we're going to go in. So each of us come at this in a really piecemeal fashion. But that's probably
each of us being each state or each hospital? Who's each?
It's actually all of the above. It's every state approaches this differently. Every hospital system approaches this differently. Every hospital within a system approaches it differently, and even down to the individual caregiver. And that's different than what occurs in many other places around the world. But none of that is new. That's been true forever. There are new, I think, fairly destabilizing factors that have been introduced over the last few years, and COVID really resulted in things being pushed over the edge. It exposed inequities. but it didn't result in inequities that weren't there before. It exposed inequities that were there before and heightened them. It worsened access to care. It worsened workforce issues. And ultimately, the financial situation for many of the hospitals and healthcare systems got even worse. And at a time when there's a heightened need for healthcare, for all sorts of reasons, partially because people delayed care during COVID and then now need that care. And so we're seeing more patients that are sicker than ever. At the very time when there's a need for more access and more care, many healthcare systems are struggling to provide even what they were able to provide before.
So we're with Dr. Kevin Tabb, who's president and CEO of Beth Israel Lahey Health. I want to go back for a second. You talked about the lack of coordination. We'll come back to that in a minute. But you then made reference to some other factors that have been destabilizing. Let's just hit them as bullets. You know, the 3 to 5, 2 to 4, you tell me, factors that you see that have really been destabilizing. What are they?
Yeah, there have been a wave of providers that simply aren't there anymore, have either exited the workforce or institutions that have shut down, some of them not hospitals, but other pieces of the healthcare ecosystem.
Give me an example.
Nursing homes, skilled nursing facilities, post-acute care, that sort of thing. And then we've seen, again, individual providers who are just tired, who are burnt out, who are leaving the workforce, understandably in many cases, but in a system that already operated at the edge. It was enough to really tip things over and result in even more difficulty in getting access to care for people that need it. And as I said, that's at the exact time when we have more people needing access, not fewer people needing access.
All right, so I'm going to go back to the other thing you said for just a minute, and then I've got so many more questions. You put at the root of this, and I will say a root of this problem that we're in, that we are significantly uncoordinated compared to other places. One might say, well, are you saying we need universal healthcare because it would force coordination?
No, I'm not saying that at all. There are lots of different ways to approach this. And I'm not the one to suggest a single way to approach it. Single payer or national healthcare is a way that some countries approach it, but it's not the way that every country approaches it.
Another way?
So there are the more important point, I think, is for there to be priority set around where money should be spent, what we should spend it on, how people should be taken care of at the highest level.
Meaning preventive medicine versus
absolutely
procedures and treatments.
That's an example. Meaning more care in the community, less care, at the large in-town facilities. That means,
which is interesting coming from a guy who runs large in-town facilities.
That's true. Although remember that I and many others now run large healthcare systems that contain all of the different components of healthcare. And so some of that is care that can't or shouldn't be provided anywhere other than the most complex places. But a lot of that care can and should be provided in the community, and we need to do more of that. It's not, though, just about providing care in hospitals. So what I was referring to is which hospitals should care be provided in. That's a piece of it. But more and more, we're seeing care that was traditionally provided in hospitals, and I don't care whether you're talking about an academic medical center or a community hospital, we're seeing that care being provided outside of hospitals. And outside of hospitals means lots of different things also. It might mean in something like an ambulatory site, an ambulatory surgery center, or a doctor's office, or something else. And of course, we've always had those things, but with advances in healthcare, we are now able to do more and more things and should be doing more and more things at a higher quality outside of the four walls of a hospital than we were before. And then it's not just in healthcare sites. More and more care actually can and should be provided in people's homes.
I was just going to say, does that include at home?
Absolutely. And there are a fair number of what I would call at this point pilot programs, maybe a little beyond that, but not a lot beyond that. Things like hospital at home programs that many healthcare systems, including our own, are trying to provide complex care, really intensive care in a person's home when appropriate. And so we're starting to see those sorts of things. We're seeing technology enable people to do that. And so that's sort of a next step, but that's not all. Increasingly, when we talk about healthcare, we need to move beyond the way we've thought about it, which is we'll take care of people when they get sick, when they show up at our door. And our door may be a hospital, it may be a doctor's office, or it may be a program that we provide in someone's home. But let's move beyond just talking about people when they're sick and talk about people before they get sick in the first place.
Okay, so I'm going to stop you there for a second. And I want to leave that. Well, okay, well, no, I'll do it this way. Before they get sick, who, what institution needs to change the most? When I was head of Catholic Charities, I remember a board member saying in a board meeting once, we have got to shift our mindset from detention to prevention. Yeah. He was not talking healthcare. But it is a fundamental shift in many things. What driver most has to change for us to move from response to sickness to prevention of bad health?
So
is it insurance? Is it who? What?
You're asking the key question. And if there was if I had an easy answer to that, I would have put it out there.
Oh, yeah, but you got to secretly think something.
Right.
You got to secretly have an opinion on this.
I think that we're going to have to come together to solve this one. The way that the system is set up, in as much as there is a system, means that in essence we're all what I would call balkanized. And so health systems are incentivized to take care of people when they're sick.
By whom?
By the way that things are set up, by the federal government, by insurance companies, by others. And these are not villains. This is simply the way that we have traditionally operated.
So regulation, money.
All of those things.
Okay.
And none of this can be solved by an individual entity on its own. So none of this is going to get completely solved by a hospital or by a health system. None of this is going to get solved by the government without involvement of providers. We're all going to have to come together. The challenge is that at a national level, there really is no ability to convene. The good news is that I believe we live in a state that has an unbelievable concentration of a real wealth of incredible healthcare, and maybe even more importantly, great minds that can think about how we can and should deliver healthcare differently. And that's the opportunity. How do we come together in this state to lead the way?
So you've been head of Beth Israel Lahey for 13 years. Are you folks having those conversations?
Absolutely. So we are having those conversations within our system, and I'll give some specific examples of the way that we're moving. And I don't believe it's enough for us on our own to have those conversations. We need together, collectively, the healthcare leaders in this state to come together and figure this out.
And actually, that was really my question, are the healthcare leaders, I mean, okay, so nod to the fact Beth Israel Lahey Health and Dana-Farber have made this, sort of earthquake of a move to build a cancer center together. I won't dive deep into that now. But across our big players and our small players, somewhere, is there a room, right, where our big players and our small players across the state are having these conversations?
I think the answer is we have that ability. And I know that we do because we did during COVID. So during COVID, all of the leaders got together on an almost daily basis, virtually, but we got together in the beginning on a daily basis with the state, with all of the other leaders. And then as sort of things got more organized, we did it on a few times a week and then weekly basis. And so we know how to do this. We did it at a time of crisis. And I think we're facing another crisis now. Certainly with the collapse of Steward Healthcare, it's potentially a real crisis for patients and communities in this state if we don't figure out how to do this together. But it's also an opportunity. It's an opportunity for us to reframe the questions that we ask and then sit down together, not each of us individually, but together, and say, how are we going to take care of all the patients and communities that need care in the state in light of the collapse of one of the large systems in the state?
What is one better question than the one we're asking now?
So when something happens like a healthcare system collapsing or an individual hospital, a set of hospitals, closing their doors.
Just reminding listeners, 9 hospitals, one already planned to close, one is closed because of a flood, but that's the portfolio for Steward Health.
Yeah, okay. And when you think about beyond the number of hospitals, the number of patients that they take care of, it's a really big, important number. The questions that frequently get asked are sort of the jockeying for position. Who's going to take which? How do we make sure that all those hospitals stay open? Which hospital is going to go to which system? I think those are the wrong questions. I think we need to start with the question of how can we ensure that we're going to take care of all the patients and communities that need care in the state? Let's start even before that and acknowledge we haven't always done that. And it's going to require us to think differently. So can we come together and say, where are we doing a good job collectively? Where do we fall short? And how do we together make sure that we do a better job? It's only at times of crisis. It's only when something really breaks, something that's big, that you get the opportunity to both ask those questions and potentially answer things differently. You know, there really hasn't been, there's a lot of turmoil in healthcare, but this is now a moment of massive change, unrelated specifically to Steward Healthcare. I'd say there hasn't been this much change in healthcare, at least since the 1960s and the introduction of Medicare, and maybe even before that. That's scary. That presents real challenge. But as I said, I believe it also presents real opportunity if we seize it.
So you finished your medical training in what, 1999?
Yeah.
The healthcare environment that you're leading in now, is it anything like what you thought you were going into when you chose to go into medicine?
I'd say it's really different. I certainly didn't choose to go into medicine thinking that I would be leading a large healthcare system. I went into medicine thinking about taking care of individual patients. And things changed for myself personally, but I also never imagined how much change there would be in healthcare. I get asked a lot by people that are providers themselves, why are you doing this? It's crazy in healthcare. These are really tough times. You know, my answer is, if you truly care about affecting significant change, now's the time. And I really believe that Massachusetts can be the epicenter of affecting significant change. We have been in the past. We have the right people. We have really great minds here. We need to move beyond simply thinking about individual medical breakthroughs and think about changing models of care.
You've talked about a couple more questions before we let you go. And I want to stay with you for a minute. You know, you've talked about people who burned out, the shortages that we're experiencing in staffing, et cetera. What about, you know, in a role like yours, coming out of COVID, did it burn you out? Has there been a day where you're like, nope, I can't do this anymore?
You know, as I said, there's a lot of change and a lot of turmoil and a lot of responsibility. I'm incredibly energized, though, by, first of all, the people that I work with. We have amazing, amazing caregivers and staff. And staff, by the way, well beyond just the frontline caregivers. In my system, we've got 40,000 people. I think on most days, 39,999 of them know how to do most of what we need to do and have better ideas than I have. My job is to listen and then break down barriers for change. And that's what I'm really energized about. And so that's what keeps me going.
So I appreciate that. I do. And you know that that's the answer I expected to hear. So give me one more, right? What's the other thing that has kept you from being burned out?
It genuinely is the feeling that now is the time for someone like myself or an organization like mine, that now is the time to affect real change. I think for a lot of us who've sort of scratched our heads about why are things done this way? Why are these crazy workarounds in place? Why don't we do things differently? For a lot of us, we now can say, well, let's stop just complaining about it. Let's stop saying, well, that's the way it is. That's the way it works. And let's start saying, yeah, that's an opportunity. That's really what gets me up in the morning.
Dr. Kevin Tabb is president and CEO of Beth Israel Lahey Health. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.